I've had a few conversations with founders lately that have really brought it home to me in a way that it hadn't before, which is this interesting nexus between business runway and the founder's personal runway. And this is something that we especially talk about in very early stage pre-revenue companies, where you're trying to build this thing. You're also living your life. A lot of founders have families. You know, this is not just sort of this isolated activity. This is something that impacts other people. The way in which the business runway and the personal runway are intertwined, they're not separate things. They are the same thing, has been really interesting to me.
You're listening to the Startup Podcast. This is an educational episode, in-depth masterclasses about the concepts essential to building, running, and investing in Silicon Valley-style startups. Whether you're a founder, investor, or operator in a startup, you'll gain insights into the principles that power high-growth disruption, the same way Facebook, Google, and Uber do it. The conversation starts now.
Hey, I'm Chris Saad.
And I'm Yaniv Bernstein.
And on today's episode, we're going to talk about runway. What is it? Getting airborne versus escape velocity, your personal founder runway, raising capital to extend your runway, and putting your business into hibernation. We actually get into some really interesting philosophical areas here, so stay tuned.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. You might know that sinking feeling. You're about to land a big contract when they ask about compliance. SOC 2, ISO, PCI, Essential 8. You've just snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Not anymore. Vanta massively accelerates your compliance efforts and allows you to get those life-changing deals back on track. Don't wait until it's panic stations, though. Get started with Vanta today. They're offering 20% off their prices just for TSP listeners. Do yourself a favor. Hit pause. Go to vanta.com/TSP. That's VANTA.com to get that 20% off.
All right, Yaniv, let's jump straight into it.
People talk about runway quite a lot in startups, but what do they actually mean by runway? I think this is an interesting one, and I think there are a few different levels of sophistication, I guess. The simplest way that runway is often talked about is the amount of cash you have in the bank divided by your burn rate. In other words, by the rate of depletion of that amount of cash. So if you've got $100,000 in the bank and you're burning $20,000 a month, 100,000 divided by 20,000 is 5. You have 5 months runway. So basically, it's talking about how long you can keep going with the funds that you have. So you can add a layer of sophistication on top of that. You can do some forecasts. You can say, sure, I'm burning $20,000 this month, but next month it'll be $15,000, and the month after that it'll be $30,000, and so on. And so what you're really talking about here is how long until you run out of cash. I think that's the basic concept of runway. I don't think it's the greatest term, because obviously the idea is you've got this far to go before you like crash into a wall and catch fire, right? And you need to get airborne before that. But the difference between the runway that a plane is on and the runway that a startup is on is the runway of a startup is not a fixed length. So I think that's really important to recognize.
In your definition of runway, though, Yaniv, you use another little bit of startup jargon, right? Called burn. It might be obvious by context, by inference, but burn is how much money you're losing every month. And so that would be your revenue minus your costs. Now, if you're profitable, you don't have a burn, and therefore you don't have a runway.
Infinite runway.
You have an infinite runway. So this might be obvious by inference, but burn is not how much money you're spending. It's how much money you are in the red when you factor in revenue and other incoming dollars, and you're still not making ends meet each month. This is one of those Silicon Valley terms like MVP, burn, agile, cross-functional squads that everybody uses. Some people in this case, I think, understand it well. Runway, I think, is one of the easier concepts to get, but people can sometimes get it wrapped around the axle in terms of what it exactly means, how to manage it, and how to really navigate through it. And so that's what we want to cover today.
Chris, what I wanted to talk to you about here is that, to me, a more significant meaning of runway is how long until you need to shut the business down. Now, running out of cash is absolutely one way you need to shut the business down, but because it's easy, it becomes deceptive. You have the simple calculation and you say, we've got 5 months runway, or we've got 18 months runway, or to your point, if you are cash flow positive and profitable, you have infinite runway, except you don't. Running out of money is absolutely one way you need to shut the business down. But like running out of business is a reason to shut the business down. Dying is a reason to shut the business down. Maybe having a spouse who tells you to get a real job is a reason to shut the business down. So one of the things I wanted to talk about here, right, is yes, a whole episode on runway as a simple financial calculation is kind of not interesting. But I think understanding the principle behind it, why it's an important principle, why it's important to understand this number really well in running a startup, I think that is an important and meaty conversation.
I think what we also want to do is decouple or deconflate running out of cash and runway from shutting your business down. There are many possible reasons why you would want to shut your business down, and running out of runway is only one of them. And running out of runway might not be a reason technically to fully shut down the business. So part of what we want to talk about in this episode is decoupling these ideas and examine each one individually and deliberately, intentionally.
I'm trying to expand the concept of runway. The principle behind runway, why it's called that, is this is how long you have to get airborne. And money is generally the way it's framed. It's like, okay, you've got to get airborne before you run out of money. But there are other things that are finite that you need to not run out of in order to keep the business viable. I advise and invest in very early stage startups. And I want to talk about spouses in this context, because I think it's the first time they've actually had a mention in this 115 episodes of our podcast. But behind many founders, there is a family, and they are not the sole decision maker around how they spend their time. It's quite common when I advise founders, I say, oh, you know, my husband or my wife has given me 12 months to not earn any money while I work on this startup. And after that, it needs to be profitable. And so they might have more runway in the business financially, but actually, if they're not able to do something, achieve some milestone, they're going to crash and burn in exactly the same way as if they'd run out of money. And I think that is something that is rarely appreciated.
We're talking about really decoupling the concept of runway from purely financial terms. You might have a commitment runway where you're just going to not be interested anymore after a certain point. You got a spousal runway, a latitude, a leash that you've been given to do a certain thing. You've maybe even got an opportunity runway, right? In terms of the window closing for when you can get in and get something done.
Exactly.
I like that very much. And so this episode, I guess, really could deal with what happens if you run out of financial runway? What does that look like? And how do you maybe mitigate that? And then let's talk about the other reasons why your runway runs out. Your opportunity to lift off becomes unavailable.
What does it mean in this metaphor to get airborne? I do not believe that simply being cash flow neutral, break even, constitutes being airborne. Whereas, you know, the traditional financial computation of runway says, if you're never going to run out of money, then the business is viable, it is airborne. But that is not true, right? Like, we have bootstrapping founders listening out there and so on. If you are working on a business full time and it's generating $500 a month for you, it's probably not airborne. If you can't expand the revenue at some point, you're going to have to do something else. You're going to have to get a job, something else, right? Or you're just going to lose interest. So you're not airborne. So I think airborne is this interesting combination of external factors and personal and internal factors as well. But I would define it, I think, Chris, as having a sustainable business for the long term. That you can say one way or another, we can see this business going on for a long time. We are airborne, right? We don't.
Well,
nothing has to change fundamentally for us to keep doing this.
I think the runway that you have, now we're talking about financial runway, is how long you've got before you crash into the wall. You can extend the runway with capital, or you can lift off the runway with, let's call it, revenue and profitability. But that still doesn't mean you've achieved escape velocity. So airborne is not enough. Escape velocity is the thing you're looking for.
What is escape velocity, Chris?
Let's talk about that. So you may have enough revenue and profitability to get off the runway, to get airborne, and therefore you're not going to crash and burn. But you may not have found a business or a sustainable go-to-market or a growth trajectory that meets your ambition as a Silicon Valley style hockey stick curve disruptor startup. And you end up in this zombie mode, technology-backed services, unscalable, whatever. And in those cases, depending on the kind of person you are and the kind of vision and ambition you had for this business, you may still want to exit that for a base hit, shut it down, walk away, pivot, or what have you. That is airborne, but not escape velocity. There's also the sense that you might be airborne in the sense that you're profitable, but that profitability doesn't meet your funding or capital requirements to achieve escape velocity, in which case you may choose to do an emergency, you know, touch and go, where you actually need to still raise capital because that amount of profitability is not enough capital to get to the escape velocity airborne that you're trying to get to.
I think what you are calling escape velocity is what I mean by airborne. And that's actually kind of my point here, right? Which is Simply being break-even, simply being able to turn a small profit, doesn't mean you have a viable, sustainable business for the long term, because there are constraints and ambitions that need to be met to make it sustainable. So let's talk about a bootstrapped business, a simple one. Again, you might say, my cost of living requires I get at least $100,000 of distribution of cash out of that business. Unless I can take $100,000 out of it each year, we're not airborne, right?
This is interesting. There's so much hidden complexity here. Let's not call that a bootstrapped startup. Let's call that a small business. Because a bootstrapped venture scale, Silicon Valley style startup, they may be bootstrapped, but they may not intend to stay that way. And therefore, being able to pull money out of the business for their lifestyle needs may be utterly insufficient.
So this is the point. Being airborne, being viable, what you call escape velocity, it's contextual, right? If you want to start a business that is just paying you a living wage, then you figure out what that living wage is and you hit that, right? If you are bootstrapped in venture scale, you have ambitions that you need to meet before you're airborne. If you have taken venture-backed, it is not only your own ambitions that are necessary to be met, but the expectations of your investors. And if you are like, oh, okay, this thing's producing 100,000 bucks a year, this is great, I can pay myself. And the investors are like, what the fuck? You need to grow. I am not okay with this. You need to grow because you have taken that venture capital. You have made that deal with people who have a different set of constraints. So you're not airborne. And yeah, you call these zombie companies, which I think has become a term, right? Which is a company that is potentially cash flow positive and profitable, but is not reaching that scale, is not growing into that valuation, perhaps, that it's gotten from its investors and past that valuation. And that's an awful place to be. And yes, I don't consider that airborne because at some point, that company is still going to hit a wall and crash. And so founders are there. And unless they can figure out how to make that thing grow, just being a profitable business that has taken on a whole bunch of venture capital, that's not viable. You are not airborne. And I think that's actually really important. And I know we've had some folks pointing out on this podcast that venture-backed is not the right approach for every business. And we completely agree with that, actually. When you're taking on venture capital, you are making a deal to hit that Silicon Valley-style scale. And until you have a clear path to that scale, doing what you're doing, you are not airborne. That is why you often have multiple rounds of venture capital to extend your runway. You call it extending your runway because you're still on the fucking ground. Doesn't matter if you've got a few million dollars in recurring revenue. You are still on the ground picking up speed.
I think there are two major lenses by which you would think through this, where the context changes the meaning of the words. If you are a small business with the ambition to build a lifestyle, quickly get to profitability, and grow in a linear fashion, A, why are you listening to this podcast? And B, the definition of airborne and escape velocity are roughly the same. It's when you are consistently profitable and you can pull money out to sustain your lifestyle. If you are a small or growing startup, your ambition is to be venture scale. Let's put aside if you're bootstrapped, venture funded, or whatever, but venture scale. This is hockey stick curves, global disruption. That's your ambition. Then the difference between airborne, meaning profitable for a few months, and escape velocity can be vast because you may have extended your runway or become quote unquote airborne through profitability. You may have extended your runway by getting to the next growth milestone and raising more capital. But those things are not the same as hitting escape velocity, meaning you are on a hockey stick trajectory and things are fired up and you may not need to raise capital again. And these things are, I wouldn't say even subtly different. They're majorly different depending on your intentions. And this is why I also struggle with companies that are ostensibly venture scale or have venture scale ambition racing to profitability. And it's like, well, that profitability might serve you at this stage. It might be true in this stage, but to get to the next level of venture scale, get to the next step toward venture scale, you may still need to raise a Series B or a Series C to invest ahead of the business, because that's the Silicon Valley style game.
To invest in growth. And this is my point. If you have a monthly expenses of $100,000 and monthly revenue of $100,000 and you're growing 3% a year, you are cash flow break even. According to a simple financial runway computation, you have infinite runway. But if you've taken venture capital, you do not have infinite runway because at some point you need to figure out how to get that growth up. And it might take extra capital, in which case you need to raise. Or it might take extra spending, in which case you're shortening your runway. Or it might simply be the case that if you keep going how you're going, you'll never run out of money, but you'll run out of interest. No one will want to be involved with your company anymore. That's exactly the zombie that we're talking about. And that is the danger zone for venture-backed companies.
Let's talk about that, because I don't think it's obvious. You said no one will want to be involved in your company anymore. Like, why on earth would that be true, Yanev? Like, company's been running in a healthy business with a healthy P&L. I don't understand what you mean, right? What we mean is that venture scale companies that want to grow fast and want to rely on venture capital at some point to grow, to invest ahead of the business, that's a lot about storytelling. And the storytelling is a lot about momentum. And so if you are sitting on your laurels, not growing for weeks and months on end, and you think that's okay, that's not okay. Because when you go to a VC meeting and go, well, actually, I've figured out after 12, 24 months of running in a kind of mediocre way, I need to raise capital. You know, well, you haven't been growing for the last 12 months, so I'm not really sure you're a growth story. I don't get it, right? So you need to keep raising and keep pouring capital, keep pouring fuel on that growth story. Or if you don't need the capital, then fine, use profit, but you need to keep growing.
I was going to say, you don't have to keep raising, you have to keep growing.
You mentioned critics, Yanev. This is the thing that critics of the show don't understand. We are not a small business show. We are a Silicon Valley-style tech startup show. Tech startups are about growth. They're about disruption. They're about software and internet-powered business models. And they are defined, characterized by growth, rapid growth. And it's okay, perfectly fine, if you don't want to build that business. If you get to a certain scale and say, you know what, Chris, you know what, Yanev, I am happy with my business. I like where it is. Congratulations. We're not talking to you. That's not what we're about.
So the other thing, and we've touched on this, Chris, but I wanted to go into it in a bit more depth because I've had a few conversations with founders lately that have really brought it home to me in a way that it hadn't before, which is this interesting nexus between business runway and the founder's personal runway. And this is something that we especially talk about in very early stage pre-revenue companies, where you're trying to build this thing. You're also living your life. A lot of founders have families. You know, this is not just sort of this isolated activity. This is something that impacts other people. And the way in which the business runway and the personal runway are intertwined, they're not separate things. They are the same thing, has been really interesting to me. And I think sometimes this is actually an uncomfortable truth for founders. I've spoken to people who are at different stages in their life as well, different stages in terms of their personal finances. And so one big difference that happens is, for example, do you need to pay yourself? Do you have enough money stashed away in some sense that you're able to do this for free? And for how long can you do it for free? There's some data that came out a couple of years ago that shows that the most successful founders going against the Silicon Valley stereotype are actually folks in their early 40s. That's the age where founder success peaks. And I think one of the reasons is obviously the second, third time founders a lot of the time. But another thing I wonder is if they have more personal capital behind them, they can actually experiment for longer. They have that longer personal runway that translates straight to the business. There's two different founders I've talked to recently. One basically needs to start bringing in real income in the next couple of months, which means either business needs to produce income or they need to be able to raise enough capital to pay themselves a salary. The other one is by no means financially independent indefinitely, but has enough money in the bank, has a spouse who is working at a reasonably well-paying job. They're happy to take zero pay for at least the next year, maybe two. So their burn rate, they're burning a couple of $100 a month, right? Which is just their cloud hosting bills, basically. Whereas these other businesses can't afford to just burn a couple of $100 a month. Not because of anything to do with the business itself, but because of the personal runway of the founders. And then again, I've mentioned the spouse thing because it's come up a surprising number of times recently in conversations I've had with founders. It's not necessarily the case that just because you believe in this thing, that your family believes in it. And they might say, okay, look, you've got a year. And by the end of the year, you need to show me that this is a real thing that's going to happen. And if not, you need to go get a job.
Yeah.
Okay, so then your personal runway is 12 months. Doesn't matter how much money the business has. You need to prove something within 12 months to your family, or else you're going to have to move on. I really think the nexus between founder runway and business runway is really tight. And it does bring me to this question of when is the right time also to start a startup? There are different levels of difficulty to running a startup that are not to do with the business itself or the business's economics itself, but with your personal economics and your personal life circumstances. And I just think that's been a really interesting new perspective for me that I wanted to share in this context.
I do think not enough people talk about the privilege of having personal runway. and that mm-hmm. people who come from maybe upper middle class to rich families, rich personal circumstances, have a real advantage in the startup game because they have that personal runway. And, you know, obviously having an infinite runway and being able to keep your burn low, on the face of it, seems like a huge advantage. I want to just, for the sake of completeness, talk about the disadvantage of having. Obviously, many companies take a long time to find product market fit. And some of the companies you've heard of, many of the companies you've heard of, were 10-year overnight successes, right? And they took a lot of experimentation, a lot of iteration to find their groove. But if there isn't a sense of paranoia and hustle and opportunity cost and urgency, I worry about companies that are comfortable in their personal runway and therefore see no need to light a fire under everybody's ass. I worry about that. As we said at the beginning, startups are really about momentum, and they're also about, to some degree, outside validation, from outside money, because you want to keep growing the valuation and the capabilities of the company. The example I'm specifically thinking of is I've seen founders, they're not in experimental mode, they're not taking advantage of that low pressure, I want to find product market fit phase. They have found product market fit. People are clamoring for what they've got, but they have still failed to grok the idea that, hey, I need to raise capital to unlock real exponential growth here before somebody comes and eats my lunch. And they're paying huge amounts of opportunity cost. And so always in these conversations, Yanev, I'm trying to be the voice of like, yes, there are comfortable places you can be. Yes, profitability gives you control. Yes, having a long personal runway is advantageous and not being beholden to arbitrary deadlines of a dead end runway. These all feel great when you're in control of your business. But the counter narrative is be careful of being too comfortable and too reticent or delaying too long the sense of urgency that I need to pour capital on this business and get to escape velocity before competitors get there first. You're in a globally competitive space, and keep that in mind.
I agree with you. There needs to be a degree of urgency. If you have the privilege of having infinite personal runway, you're supported by a spouse, you've done well in a previous career, whatever, and you don't take a sense of urgency, there's not some limited resource, then you don't really have a startup. You have a hobby, you know? And I think that's the point. Yes, you need to be fully committed. You need to have hustle and urgency and energy. And I agree, if you don't do that, you're in trouble. Usually there's some forcing function, but not always. You're right. On the other end of the curve, and I think it's something that, like you said, doesn't get talked about enough. When we talk even about diversity in startups and so on, the distortions that happen to people who don't have much personal runway, they affect the way the business gets built. There's this sort of interesting combination of hustle and urgency, but also patience, right? We talked about how long it can take to get to profitability and so on. They're in a hurry to get paid because they need to be. They have to be. So this is not a judgment. This is an observation. They need to get paid. And so if they are not able to raise capital and then pay themselves out of that, then they're in trouble. And so often what you see is companies like that, they go out to raise too early before they're going to succeed. And then you get this spiral of distraction and frustration where it's like, I need to raise money so I can pay myself, so I can keep doing this startup. I'm going out to raise and they're saying, see me in 6 months. And we're like, well, in 6 months, I'll have shut this thing down. And so I think this is something to really consider. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying this is how it is. When you are founding a startup, when you're building your business case, you absolutely need to include your personal runway in that and think about how these things interplay and what that means for your approach to building your startup. This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. The team at Vanta are passionate about helping you secure your business by vastly cutting down on the time to get compliant with frameworks like ISO 27001, SOC 2, and Essential 8. Vanta lets you close deals, sleep better at night, and get back to building your product. Help yourself and help the podcast by going to vanta.com/TSP for an exclusive 20% off deal.
Okay, Yanev, so now let's talk about when do you start thinking about your runway and solving for extending that runway, right? So if liftoff is not on the horizon, escape velocity is not on the horizon, you need to start thinking about extending that runway so you can have more time.
This is something that I've experienced both as a founder and as an investor and just talking to folks. Founders underestimate how much runway they need to have at any given time. It's very common to wait too late to raise, where you're like, oh, okay, you know, I've got 6 months runway, I'll keep doing my thing, strengthen the case, get a better valuation or get a better chance of raising. 5 months, 4 months, 3 months, 2 months. And like, okay, I just want to hit a milestone before I go out to raise. And they go out to raise and they've got 2 months of money in the bank. And they're like, oh, that's fine. Well, no, it's not fine, because raising money takes time. That's one thing. And the thing to realize is, okay, you go out, you may not hit a home run straight away. You might have to talk to multiple investors, do multiple rounds of iteration, and then you have to get a term sheet and so on. That can take some time. Get that signed, get everyone involved. Maybe then there's some paperwork and so on. And even if you have a signed term sheet and all your investors committed, it could still take more time till you have money in the bank. And then that brings me to the second piece of that, which is leverage. We actually just had an episode on leverage. One of the things that's going to happen as your runway gets shorter is your leverage gets weaker and the investor's leverage gets stronger. And even if they're not nasty, exploitative people, it's still going to play out in the negotiation, because you're going to be more desperate and it's just going to weaken your bargaining position. So you'll get a worse deal if you're running out of money.
So I actually want to frame this slightly different, Yanev, which is the principle of ABC, always be closing. Every action you're taking in your business should be to deliver investable outcomes that you can take to an investor meeting, the next investor meeting. And what is an investable outcome? It's a great business outcome. So those two things are the same. And the reason I want to point that out is a lot of founders are off doing a random partnership here, a random whatever there, and these things don't ladder up to investable outcomes, right? They're just good opportunities that came along, but they're not opportunities for investable milestones and business outcomes. And then they start noticing their runway is running out and they start racing to do investable outcomes and milestones, right? You should always be focused on investable milestones and outcomes. That's the first thing. Always be closing, always be fixated on great business outcomes that are investable. The second thing is you should always be sending investor updates, getting to know investors and sending them updates, adding them to your mailing list. And so you're always raising in the sense that you're always drumming up interest in the business. And then you should be doing a roadshow months before you want to start raising, which is to say, hey, we're going to start a fundraising process in 3-4 months. And I wanted to give you an update on the business, and I wanted to understand what you need to see to get conviction on our deal, on our fundraise when I come back to you with that, so that you can solicit feedback. And it gives you a cheat code. You know what that investor is looking for in the pitch meeting. And then finally, and only then, you need to go and actually raise the round. And to your point, Yanev, that's when you need way more runway for that than you ever possibly could imagine. We have a whole episode about all the things that need to happen during that fundraising process and how long it takes. And so your job, again, as a founder of an ambitious hockey stick curve, Silicon Valley style, venture scale start, I don't know how many caveats we can include. As a founder of one of these startups, one of your main jobs is to be raising capital. That's your job. Raising capital, setting vision, hiring great people. That's it.
Or always be raising, which is, I guess, what you're saying. Different points, but they are complementary.
Then I can't say ABC. Come on.
There's a subtle thing here. You're not actually closing here. And I'm not just saying this to be pedantic. I think it's different. What you are doing is creating an environment when you choose when to raise, not because you're running out of money, but because the time is right. And in order to do that, you need to be maximizing your optionality. Why do founders leave it too late to raise? One is they're naive. They just don't realize it's a bad idea. But then the two real reasons are either they don't have anything investable, to use your term earlier on, Chris, so they may have tried raising, or they might have just not tried because they don't have anything to raise off of. So then they're running out of money and they're raising, and it's a race to produce something investable before they run out of runway. And that's a weak position to be in, right? So it is always be adding this investable value. That is not ABC, but it's more accurate.
You've ruined my pithy, simple acronym, Yanev. I don't understand.
You know, I ruin everything, genius. Baby. That's my role here. But then the third reason, which is, I think, another one that's worth discussing because it's a trap, is, oh, let's maximize valuation, right? Because if you are doing exactly what you suggested, Chris, as a founder, right, which is incrementally or continuously adding investable value, the logic then goes, oh, the longer I wait, the more bits of investable value I've created, the higher a valuation I can get, the more cash I can raise, the lower dilution I can get. And it is not that the logic is faulty as such, but that it is unconstrained, right? Which is saying, yes, the longer you wait, the more you can raise, but also the longer you wait, the less runway you have, the less leverage you get, and the more urgent things become. And so I think the best founders are not greedy on valuation. They raise ahead of time, perhaps at a lower valuation than they could have gotten. They're not redlining it. You don't want to be playing a game of chicken with your runway. And so if you have an opportunity to raise before it gets that way, then you should. But I so often see people with this sort of like, oh, just one more thing type of syndrome, where they're like, oh, okay, yeah, we've got a good business, but we're about to launch this new feature, or this new line of business and then the valuation will go up. So I'm just going to wait another few months. And that is a really dangerous game to play. And it's just not a game that you should be playing.
Yeah. In fact, this is a syndrome that I see all throughout the startup journey, right? Which is the founder is never quite happy with the MVP, never quite happy with the product, never quite happy with the go-to-market, and never quite actually does anything. So perfect is the enemy of the good there. And that includes never quite happy with the whole business and therefore never takes it to market or raises capital. It's better if you start your roadshow and your fundraising when you have things still in the can that you haven't shipped. Because what you want to be able to do is during the roadshow and the fundraising, you want to be able to say, we're going to launch X and we're going to launch Y, and actually doing it during the fundraiser, they can go, wow, this guy delivers on what he says. This company is accelerating away from us. We need to get on this train fast. And so, yeah, I don't think it's faulty logic. I never think it's more about an optimization, right? And too early is too early, too late is too late. You need to find the peak of that wave. Sometimes it's just before the peak so that as you're fundraising, you're peaking as you're talking to them. And that's a different lens to look at this as well.
Fundamentally, it's about getting the timing right, which, like with most things, is more of an art than a science. But the sciencey bit is, if you've left it too late, you've definitely left it too late. I'd say probably sub 6 months is too late. And I would also say, in terms of observation of what actually happens, I think raising too early is pretty rare. And also the cost of raising too early is fairly small, right? It's a bit more dilution than you would have copped otherwise. Raising too late is rampant. So while I agree, there's a peak, nearly all the mistakes happen when you wait too long. And so that's really the point I want to make here is you do not want to be running out of runway. When in doubt, I would say raise if you can. If you're not sure whether you've quite hit the peak or not, better safe than sorry. You're better extending the runway, even if it's not optimal, rather than waiting too long and potentially risking the entire business.
Now, the devil's advocate argument here, I can hear some savvy listeners screaming at us that raising capital is distracting and value destructive, and founders need to put that round to bed and move on and focus on more important things. And I think you need to listen very carefully to what we're saying, which is you need to always be delivering new value, investable value in your company. That is the job of the founders. That's not just a fundraising problem. That's a business problem. You need to always be sharing updates with your stakeholders on a regular basis. That's not a fundraising problem. That's a business problem. And you need to go to market when all of those people are super primed to raise capital. And that should be super easy because of all of that basic blocking and tackling you've been doing anyway. And you take the money off the table quickly because of all of that warming up and priming you've been doing before you enter the round. Right. And then certainly when you close the round, you go back to that business as usual, priming for the next round and just running a good business. So I don't think anyone should be confused by what we're saying here, Yanev, which is like always be out in the field taking random meetings with investors. That's not what we're saying. It's about the right thing at the right stage in the cycle and time the cycle correctly.
What I'm thinking about is that quote that's often used and attributed to various people. I think maybe Abraham Lincoln is the most common one. Which is, you know, if I were given 6 hours to chop down a tree, I would spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. And actually, that's quite apt here in terms of fundraising, which is to say a lot of the effort in fundraising should be expended in exactly what you say, Chris, which is talking to investors, providing investable value, building those connections. That's the sharpening the axe. So that when you go out to raise, it is easy. So raising is never easy. It is a lot easier and a lot less likely to fail, because I've also seen founders go out, try to raise around, fail, and then they have to start again with less runway a bit later on. That's a huge waste of time. So what we're saying is, yes, you have these bursts of activity, that's chopping down the tree, but those bursts will be actually a lot less distracting and a lot shorter if you have a sharp axe. So you're not talking about spending more hours altogether. If anything, it's potentially few hours, but we're actually doing it in a way that is more continuous. So that the raising the rounds, it's more like you have a constant baseline, then you have a peak of activity, which is the raise, but you can get it done relatively quickly because everything's warm. You have your investors lined up. They know what you're doing. They know you. They like you. You get the raise done. And then you go back to keeping them updated and starting to lay the groundwork for the next raise.
Okay, Yanev. So we've talked about what is runway exactly. We've talked about what is getting airborne versus escape velocity. We've talked about the personal founder runway and how that connects to your business runway. And the idea that runway may mean just how much time you have to execute. There's financial runway and there's spousal runway and there's commitment runway, opportunity runway, that these things might run out at any time. And then we've talked about raising capital to extend your runway. I don't know how you extend your spousal runway and your personal commitment and opportunity runway, but those are probably topics for another episode.
Buy them flowers.
That's right. So then the next and probably one of the final topics we want to cover is, okay, let's say you failed to extend that financial runway. The obvious next step is, well, do I have to shut my company down? Or what are the options that are available to me?
Well, I'd actually say to an outsider, the obvious next step is to shut the company down. To the founder who has put so much into it, and again, I've had a few conversations like this recently, which is, you know, it's not that easy for folks. The obvious thing for the founder is, I've built something, there's value here, I'm going to put it into hibernation, into stasis, which is basically about saying, I'm going to cut my costs to near zero. That means letting go of the entire team and any other marketing expenses, anything else. And you're basically putting your thing, your business into an induced coma and waiting for better times to arrive. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think about when I hear this intention, the founder said, well, you know, we're trying to raise. And I'm like, what if you run out of money? Because again, sometimes the runway's short. I feel like I need to ask the tough questions. Like, what if you run out of money? And they say, oh, I'll put the business into hibernation and wait. And I think one of the questions is, wait for what? And is it worth it? Chris, I'm interested in your thoughts here, because I don't think it's a black or white option. I'm not saying you should never do this, but I'm saying you need to answer the question, is it worth doing this as opposed to just cleanly ending things? And what do I need to consider in evaluating whether it's worth it?
Yeah, this is a difficult one, Yanev, and I do think it depends on context and personalities and ambition and so on and so forth. Let me try to parse through this. The first thing I said is startups are really about momentum and growth and raising capital against those things to achieve escape velocity. And maintaining momentum or raising capital for a company that's been hibernated, I think is difficult. It's difficult to tell a momentum story off a hibernation business or a business you're trying to dust off hibernation. That's not always true. You know, if you've got some incredible IP that you want to keep on the shelf and try to sell to someone, or I'm reminded of Grok with a Q, who had these incredible, they call them LMUs now, this technology to process tokens for AI faster than anybody else. That's been baking for 5, 6, 7 years. And they were about to die over and over and over again. And they've probably been in relative hibernation for a while. And they had the benefit of Chamath's capital and others behind them. If they had kept those dies or that IP or that business on a slow burn until the market shifted in their direction and they could dust it off and go, boy, do we have a technology for you, that makes a certain amount of sense. But if you are in a hot space with a relatively straightforward SaaS thing and it's gotten little to no traction, no one seems to be interested in the problem you were interested in or the solution you designed, putting that thing on ice is probably not very useful. You just didn't find product market fit. Your intuition wasn't right. Your experiments failed. And for those, I think it's worth just going, you know what, let's just cut our losses and walk away and make it a clean emotional break. Maybe the way to summarize this is, if you have real deep tech, real breakthrough innovation, it's just the time for it has not come, then maybe you put that on a shelf. If you had an instinct about some SaaS tool or social tool and nobody cared, it's probably time to just put it to bed and free yourself of the cognitive and emotional load of having that thing laying around.
I'm thinking of some conversations I've had recently, Chris, where people say, I just need another 3 months. You know, my runway is just a bit too short. I can see that I'm about to take off. I just need another 3 months and I'm not able to get them. So I'm going to put the business into hibernation. I'm going to see if I can, during that period, magic up the capital from somewhere. Have you seen that work?
I've seen founders a lot in that situation. Often when they speak to me, the business has stalled. They seem to be on the verge of something, like they're on the verge of launching, they're on the verge of shipping, they're on the verge of a deal, but they're waiting for capital to give them permission to do it. And I find that very frustrating, because it's like, hang on, so you're saying you've built the entire thing, but you're trying to raise capital before you launch it. And I don't understand. It's like, launch the fucking thing and raise capital against its momentum. What I see is a lot of companies frozen in place waiting for the capital for no good reason. They're actually already paying enough of the bills that they could put it in market, increase their momentum, and increase their likelihood of raising capital. In terms of the companies that are in full comatose hibernation, where they kind of spun up a little bit and then they shut it all down, put it on ice, I haven't seen many of them come back to life. And I want to be careful. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying I don't see a lot of that happen.
I think that makes sense. And yes, nothing's impossible, but it's always worth considering what they call the base rate, right? Which is, don't consider yourself, consider the entire group of people or organizations in your situation. At what rate do they recover, right? So that's the same for startups, for venture-backed startups in general, right? We often say most venture-backed startups fail, but nobody thinks that their one's going to fail. Well, guess what? The base rate says your one's probably going to fail. You are not so special. So it's always worth, whenever you do these things, going into them with your eyes open. This is a very emotional thing. You know, we've talked about the way that as a founder, you need to care so much about your startup. It can start to fuse with your identity, and it's very hard to let go. And so I think the thing is, it's not to not feel those emotions, right? I think that's just a part of it. But when you are trying to make a rational business decision, you need to step away from your emotions and have a look at the actual situation and make a decision with your eyes open. And I think, yeah, quite often running out of runway, it's really hard to recover from. Not impossible. Really hard. So when you are looking at your own business, you're like, oh, I'm running out of runway. What should I do? Be rational as much as possible. And that often means getting advice from people who you can really get good, clear-eyed advice from, and not just put your thing into an induced coma because you love it and you don't want to let it go.
You just said the word I wanted to add, Yanev, which is clear-eyed and rational. Because if you are over-inflating the value of what you've built and the uniqueness of it, the rational answer is we should absolutely keep this going at all costs and we're going to put it on ice and do whatever. This is too valuable to let it go. Like if you have the answer to death and eternal youth, then the rational thing is to never let it go. But if you are clear-eyed about its value and then rational about what to do with that value, I think that's the right combination.
Exactly. Okay, so I think that's probably a good place to wrap up, Chris. And yeah, this ended up, as always, being a bit of a deeper conversation than we were perhaps expecting coming in, and maybe in a way more personal, because I think it's come off a whole lot of conversations I've had lately with people, and the fact that runway is this underlying threat and underlying anxiety behind venture-backed startups. It's not an easy situation. So folks, if you're listening, if you're struggling with this, know that you're not alone, and you know, you have our absolute best wishes, but remember, you are not your startup, and you have to always frame this in terms of rational business decisions. So, Chris, like I said, I've been speaking to a lot of folks like this who are trying to figure out the right next move and make sure that they make the most of the capital that they have so they don't run out of runway. So if you are a founder and want to make sure that you are spending your precious capital, your precious time on building investable value, as we talked about, Chris, I know that's something you love to help folks with. So how can folks get in touch?
Yeah, that's right, Yanev. The thing that I'm most passionate about is focusing people on investable value and fast forwarding to those investable value milestones as quickly as possible, right? So that by the time you are raising capital, you've just got a stack of them stacked up and the story is really easy and the fundraising is as easy as possible. If you want to learn more about that, subscribe to my newsletter over at chrissard.com/newsletter and learn more about my advisory at chrissard.com/advisory.
Now, there are a lot of things in your life that you can't control. You can't control whether you're going to run out of runway. You can't control whether your startup will succeed. But you know what you can control is whether you honor the Startup Podcast Pact. Now, we've made this very clear. If you listen to our podcast for more than a couple of episodes and you like what we do, you get value from us. You have implicitly signed up to the Startup Podcast Pact, which means that in return for this amazing free value that we're giving you, that you give us a shout out on LinkedIn, that you follow us on YouTube and in your listening app, and that you give us a rating or review and generally share this with other folks who you think might get value from it. This allows us to keep going. It allows us to help more people. And it makes you feel good that you're the sort of person who honors a pact. So thanks so much.
All right, Nev, great chatting. We'll talk soon.
Yep, absolutely, Chris. Have a good one.
This episode of the Startup Podcast was brought to you by Vanta. Vanta helps businesses get and stay compliant by automating up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand compliance frameworks. With over 200 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your business relies on. Head to vanta.com/TSP for 20% off their incredible offering and start unlocking extra revenue today.
You know, I'm always struck. I've been watching the Y Combinator Startup School videos lately with Michael Siebel and whoever else. And I'm sometimes wonder myself, like, hey, you know, this is Y Combinator. They're putting out these videos. And is there really any room for a startup podcast from two random jokers? And it does strike me that they talk so much from a place of privilege and a place of like, well, of course it's done this way. And like, you know, if you're fully connected to everyone in Silicon Valley and working under Y Combinator's brand, like, this is just the way you do it. And it just strikes me that I'm very proud of our show having so much empathy for the global perspective and the personal perspective and the nuances that those kind of shows don't get into. And on the other side, there are other shows, other podcasts, which are much more casual and meandering and purely anecdotal. And I think we find this really great line, if I can blow smoke up our own ass, of being personal, nuanced, but information dense, and generalizing the advice that we've seen so that it's universal for our listeners.
We are absolutely the best, Chris. No doubt about it. The metaphor that I often think about with this sort of thing is, you know, when you're inside, it's nighttime and you're in a brightly lit room, you can't see outside. All you can see is the reflections of your own room. But if you're outside in the dark, you can see everything inside the room and everything in the darkness around you. Well, we are creatures of the darkness, Chris. And so for folks, we have people listening to us in 100 different countries, which is amazing, from all walks of life, different levels of financial privilege and other types of privilege, all the way up to people who are in Silicon Valley listening to us and still getting value. So I agree. I think having one foot in each camp, having been to Silicon Valley, working for those sorts of companies, but also worked in ecosystems outside of there, does give us that broad perspective that I hope, dear listeners, is helping all of you.
And if you've listened this far, because we'll probably put this at the very end if we put it anywhere, thanks for being such a loyal listener and leaving your player on and forgetting to hit pause.
Yep.
See you later, guys.
And send us a note. We love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye-bye.